I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WIAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. I'll be here for 2 hours today. Next hour, we typically on Thursdays have our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with Americans for Prosperity, but the whole staff is involved in things and have given me the cold shoulder for today, so Freedom and Prosperity is canceled for today. We'll have them back in next week, but we are going to have next hour, since I got a little extra time, I'm going to have Stephen Utroska, who has filled in for me and formerly with Americans for Prosperity. He is my kind of my crypto consigliere. He's a very pro-cryptocurrency guy. He understands these things. He owns them. It's been a pretty rough ride lately in the crypto universe, and I'm going to have him call in and explain a little bit about cryptocurrencies, and most particularly, I mean, this is, sometimes I do segments just for myself. There's a, what I believe was a, called a stable coin, Luna. Now, see, I could even be getting that wrong. This is why I'm going to have Stephen call in. But some Luna coin basically fell out of the bed and just had a huge plunge, maybe down now to be, did I hear correctly that maybe there's 22 zeros before the value of this thing at this point? So anyway, there's been a lot of carnage in the crypto space, and I want him to, he'll call up and I would imagine he'll make his case for being bullish on Bitcoin and these others. And, you know, I'll say it once again. I'm a fan of the idea of a decentralized coin. I'm just wary of where these things are headed. Smart people on both sides. We'll get Stephen's take on it and find out exactly what's happening in the crypto markets. People, I believe, are going to be looking for places to put their money to protect it soon. Let me just put it that way. Now, I'm a big believer in gold and silver. I believe that everybody should have 10% of any investable assets in gold and silver. It is inflation protection. We'll talk a little bit in a second about what's going on in the markets and here economically. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to explain the doom loop that I see us now entering financially. I think this is unfortunately an accurate term to describe what we are about to see take place. I could be wrong, so maybe this is just a prediction that never comes true. If you want to run away from what feels like the economic reality of the situation, then you can do that. Many people do. Many people choose to stick their head in the sand. The ostrich comes to mind. But I think I've got headlines, and what we saw in the markets yesterday show there are some problems coming. And this doom loop, I've seen it. I knew it was coming. The conditions for it have been lining up for quite a period of time, particularly over the last dozen or so years. But I think it's in view now. And we'll go through some of the headlines that show, and I'll explain to you why it's a doom loop, why particularly the Federal Reserve, our government, has gotten themselves into this cycle now where they are essentially helpless. We've done a lot of can kicking down the road. That can now is too big to kick. It's just kicking it is going to break our foot rather than buy us time. So we'll talk about that. I'll explain to you kind of the steps that I see coming, what to be on lookout for. And, you know, during times of great financial upheaval, people who understand what's going on can do really well. This is why you shouldn't hide from these things. So if you understand what is taking place, and I'm just bound and determined for people to understand what's taking place rather than being a partisan about this, because it's destroying the minds of some very smart people. to think that this is like a one-party issue, or it's this guy's fault or that guy's fault. It's all the billionaires' fault. It's all the Democrats' fault. It's all Joe Biden's fault. It's all the Republicans' fault. I got to be honest with you. I look at everybody who says things like that. It's children, essentially. And this is going to be a bit of a class today. Anyway, we'll look at it. That's probably not probably a tad bit condescending. But before I get to that, I cannot resist. You know, I start just about every show now with a quote of the day. Well, I've got quote of the day, quote of the week, quote of the month, quote of the year in a audio quote today. George W. Bush. Have you seen this thing? George W. Bush was speaking at the George W. Bush Institute. Now, when I see institute, I immediately think of some kind of a mental crisis center, some place for the insane people, and in George W. Bush's case, the criminally insane to reside. But he is speaking at the George W. Bush Institute, and this is what he said.
In contrast, Russian elections are rigged. Political opponents are imprisoned or otherwise eliminated from participating in the electoral process. The result is an absence of checks and balances in Russia, and the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine. Iraq, too. Anyway. 75.
Yes, we're going to listen to this again. To be honest with you, I saw this last night. I had no show yesterday. I left the studio. I was immediately busy until about 11:30 last night. And I remember sitting down at my computer, and I was really a little bit stressed out, to be honest with you, because I've been telling you, I've been having some challenges. My schedule is so packed. I've got a lot of late nights with other things that I do, and I need sleep. I've got to start getting better sleep. I'm getting 4 to 5 hours on most nights of sleep. So I was sitting down at my computer last night at 11:30 thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to get a show together. Either that or I got to wake up at the crack of dawn. Either way, you understand, I was only going to get a certain amount of sleep to get a show. And then I run across this clip. And I'll be honest with you, last night I was thinking about facing 2 hours of airtime. I had nothing particular planned to talk about. And then I ran across this clip. I thought to myself, I may just play it over and over again for 2 hours. The truth wants to come out of this war criminal's mouth. Now, I don't know if there are still some George W. Bush fans out there. I don't know a lot of people that have not kind of caught on to the Bush crime family that exists right next to the Clinton crime family, the Obama crime family, and the Biden crime family. The Bush crime family is almost really the Clinton, Obama, Bidens are kind of the nouveau criminal. The Bush clan goes all the way back to the early 1900s and started with the oligarch Prescott Bush, who was one of the funders of Adolf Hitler. You can look that up. It's very strange that that never came up in any campaign. Isn't that interesting? You know, we have this system where we are told that the Republicans and the Democrats are mortal enemies, hell-bent on the destruction of others, constantly struggling to take over the reins of power to guide the country in the direction that they see is best for all of us. We're told that these two diverse parties, a constant struggle between the two, yet every Democrat that wanted to know, because I know, and you can look it up in a minute and a half doing an internet search. I know that George W. Bush's and George H.W. Bush's, they didn't bring this up during the 1980s. They didn't bring it up during the 1970s when George H.W. Bush was put on the ticket as a vice presidential candidate. They didn't bring it up in the late 1980s when H.W. Bush was a presidential candidate that, hey, you know, their dad, or H.W. Bush's dad, he was a... He helped fund Hitler. Don't you think that might be a campaign talking point? Maybe we don't go with this family. This guy from the CIA whose dad was caught. And I believe Prescott Bush, was he involved in the business plot? It was basically a fascist takeover of the U.S. government that was plotted back in the 1930s. I mean, you know, it's just one of these things. You would think somebody might bring it up if they're really trying. It's a lot like election integrity. You would think if there's been problems and fraud in our election for decades, and we all know there has been, you would think one party or the other would implicate the other ones in it and bust it up. If there's sex trafficking or other perversions, you would think one party might bust the other party on it. But they never get around to those things, do they? Greg Harper kept the secret list of congressional payouts for sexual harassment. Now, if Greg Harper was this Republican facing off with these Democrats for control, for the fighting for the soul of the nation, don't you think Greg Harper might let us know, hey, look at all these Democrats. They're a bunch of sexual deviants and predators. But no, he kept that list secret. Why? Because there's Republicans and Democrats on that list. They keep each other's secrets. They keep each other's secrets from us. Anyway, this is the war criminal. If you are still not clued in to the Bush crime family, this is the war criminal, George W. Bush. Now, I give him a slight pass. I give him just the tiniest ounce of grace when it comes to George W. Bush, because I do believe he is functionally retarded. So there's that. You know, Dick Cheney is really, truly kind of the blood-soaked monster. Dick Cheney's the kind of guy you don't leave your children alone with. He's such a, he's a monster. George W. Bush is just a dupe. He's got to be one of the most intellectually challenged people that has ever occupied the White House, and that's saying a lot, including the current occupant of it now. So I do give him a pass for being quite the simpleton. Nevertheless, millions of people around the world have died in George W. Bush's illegal wars and setting us off on this path after his ditty. It was his ditty, H.W. Bush, one of the OGs of the Bush crime family, that kicked us off in the Middle East in the first place, right? As soon as the wall fell down and the Cold War was over, H.W. Bush said, oh, my God, what are we going to do now? We got a defense industry we got to feed. Somebody get me a globe and justify some invasions or something. We got to buy some more weapons. We can't just let peace. We can't let peace break out around the world. And so within 9 months of the fall of the Berlin Wall, we were invading Iraq. In the Iraq War won. But George W. Bush kicked it into high gear with the War on Terror, the Department of Homeland Security, the TSA, the NSA spying on you, the Patriot Act. This is one of the most self-effacing simpleton warmongers out there, but at the same time, a warmonger nonetheless. I'll play this clip one more time because it is too beautiful.
In contrast, Russian elections are rigged. Political opponents are imprisoned or otherwise eliminated from participating in the electoral process. The result is an absence of checks and balances in Russia and the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Ukraine.
There's a little laugh there. Yeah. And let me tell you, I had a Bush-Cheney bumper sticker on my car. That's right. In 1999, the year 2000, a Bush-Cheney bumper sticker on my car. I must atone. And this is also proof positive. You can learn new things and change your mind if you're willing to. I allowed the Bushes, the Cheneys, the McCains, the Trentlots to turn me into a psychopathic warmonger for the Republican Party. I am trying to earn my stripes to get into the pearly gates at some point by publicly disavowing them and ripping them a new one every time I get a chance. The truth wants to come out. This war criminal admits to it. He should be tried at The Hague along with the rest of them. Be right back. Now, I am no different than anybody else out there. I want life to be all rainbows and candy canes. Absolutely. You know, I think about my childhood here growing up in the United States. Ah, it's just absolutely fantastic. I wanted to replicate that for my children. I think I pretty successfully did, save the horrific divorce that took place in the middle of it. But my kids had a great childhood. I love just prosperity and freedom, and happiness, time with friends. I enjoy watching SEC football, sports documentaries. I love watching a good movie. I actually have some admiration for the people in Hollywood, as left-wing nutjobbery as they have inside of them. I love good entertainment stuff. But we've had rainbows and candy canes for quite some period of time, but it's all been an illusion. So I hope you've enjoyed it, because it's coming to an end. How's that for an uplifting part of the show? Look, you can stick your head in the sand. You're so depressing, Mike. Well, playtime's over. And I think what I'm going to explain to you is what I'm seeing from a couple of headlines today. We are entering the doom loop portion of our program here in the United States, the history of this country. Yesterday, the markets took a huge plunge. Apparently, this was led by Target's huge profit miss. Before that, a day or two before that, we had heard that Walmart had also had a big miss, and I think Walmart stock had dumped about 20% itself, or 12%, and Target was 20%. It really doesn't matter. And what the problem is that these retailers, these massive retailers, are saying that the reason that they're missing profits is that their costs have gone up so much. Now, it wouldn't really matter to their profits if their costs had gone up and they had raised their prices to reflect these costs. It would hurt the consumer, but it would help the companies, right? They would keep their profit margins intact, but they haven't. I guess they believed the lies of the Federal Reserve and of the Biden administration and of CNBC and all of the financial masters out there that told us, oh, this inflation is just transitory. And so Target and Walmart figure, yeah, our costs are going up, but we don't want to scare away our customers. We'll just eat it for just a little while until this inflation calms back down. Problem is, it's not calming back down. It's actually accelerating. And this shows that, well, number one, the Biden administration's ridiculous charge that it is greedy corporations that are just taking advantage of inflation to raise their prices to gouge the consumer is absolutely 180 degrees away from the truth. What is actually happening is businesses are having to absorb some of these extra costs that they're seeing, and they have not yet passed them on to the consumer. They have sacrificed their profit margins to try to keep their prices lower than they really need them to be. This means there is a coiled snake, a coiled spring of additional inflation just sitting in the Walmarts and in the Amazons, in the Targets, in your local restaurants, waiting to spring out. Because now these businesses are realizing this inflation isn't going anywhere. We're going to have to raise our prices even more. So this inflation is about to get worse. This is further inflation that's about to be added to your prices. Now, I keep making the point that only the most economically illiterate blame Joe Biden for this inflation. It's a little bit like talking to children, though, to be honest with you. Most people either can't understand or they just refuse to understand that Donald Trump, Barack Obama, George Bush are all just equally to blame as Joe Biden. You know, this happened on Joe Biden's watch, must be his fault. Like I say, it's kind of a childlike mentality to not be able to understand the path that gets you somewhere, to just look at where you are and say, well, who's in charge right now? It must be his fault. But if you still cannot grasp the true causes of inflation and you blame Joe Biden, please explain this to me. The United Kingdom headline inflation hit 9% in April, marking its highest level in 40 years. Food banks are reporting an increase in demand for food packages, while small business owners say a combination of higher taxes and increased costs have pushed them to the edge of bankruptcy, according to the report. So please call and explain to me how Joe Biden caused inflation in Great Britain. I mean, what a powerful guy for a simpleton. For a mentally handicapped, damn near 80-year-old man, he sure is powerful. Not only has he unleashed inflation in the United States, he's caused it in Great Britain, too. So if you want to call and explain that to me, 601-879-0002, and then explain this as well. Inflation in Germany is 7.4%. Inflation in Belgium, 8.31%. Inflation in Brazil, 12.13%. Inflation in Canada, 6.8%. Denmark, 6.7%. Inflation across the European Union is 8.1%. Somebody please call in and explain to me, because everybody seems to have gotten it figured out, because I keep hearing conservative talk show hosts talk about the Bidenflation. Explain to me how the European Union, how Joe Biden was able to infect Brazil and the European Union, Canada, with inflation as well. See, because I can explain why inflation is rising all over the world. And I was warning you about this inflation in 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. And in those years, I had no idea who was going to be president in 2022, 2021. I kind of assumed it might be Donald Trump, but I still gave you the warning. And it's not because I'm any kind of a genius. It's because I listen to people who truly understand what causes inflation and understand true economics. And I just passed that along. What they said made sense to me. If you print up a bunch of money during administration after administration after administration, that extra money sloshing around, more dollars chasing fewer goods, makes prices rise. It's pretty simple stuff. But somehow the partisans in this country have distilled it down to it's the same thing as the Trump administration. Orange man bad. Now we've got dementia patient bad. It's all Joe Biden's fault. Again, there's a million reasons to not like Joe Biden. I can spend shows listing them if you want me to. But this problem has been going on and has been revving up, and now it's here, and people continue to believe it's this one person and convincing themselves they can vote their way out of this. I got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
Yes, Mike. Good morning.
Morning.
The word that you are about, what you're looking for is one word. It's called fiat.
Yep.
And I will let you explain that to the audience, because I just get irritated.
Yeah.
So you have a good morning.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. We have what's called a fiat currency. It's backed by absolutely nothing. And the funniest thing to me about the partisans, particularly right now, blaming the Democrats and Joe Biden. And look, the Democrats and Joe Biden get their 50% of the blame. The Republicans get the other 50%. The person that really set us off on this monetary experiment of just juicing the economy with endless printed money was the Republican, Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon's more responsible for the inflation we're seeing right now than Joe Biden is, to be honest with you. Richard Nixon was more responsible for the inflation during the Carter administration than Jimmy Carter was. Now, Jimmy Carter then did some things to create shortages like price controls. I've talked about this before. I don't want to keep repeating myself. But again, this is difficult stuff. You've got to actually step outside the partisan tribe. And I know it's hard to talk about this at a cocktail party or at the country club, because everybody else wants to just blame Joe Biden. It's so much more fun. He's such an easy target. He's such a putz. But we have a currency that is just, it's monopoly money. At this point, it's not hard to understand that if you've got 10 Babe Ruth rookie cards circulating in the world, the value of those things is going to be pretty high. Only 10 people in the world have got Babe Ruth's rookie card. Well, if they start printing them off and suddenly there's 100 of them, well, then it's not quite so special. They're worth, each one of them's worth a little bit less. Well, if they print off another 10,000, then it's just another piece of cardboard. You ain't got anything special. Everybody's got one of those things. They print off 100,000 Babe Ruth rookie baseball cards. Obviously, you understand intrinsically, well, that's not a rare thing. Nobody's going to pay a lot of money for that. There's too many of them out there. You're not special. It's the same thing with our currency. And let's not forget who else is to blame outside of Joe Biden, Donald Trump, Barack Obama, George Bush, and basically every president since Nixon. And the funny thing is it was before that, it was Johnson. Johnson getting us involved in the Vietnam War the massive amount of spending between the Vietnam War and the Great Society of Johnson is what started a run on the dollar that we couldn't back with gold, that put us in the precarious situation where Richard Nixon, instead of paying the price, letting us have the problem then, letting it wash out, having to stop all the debt of this country, instead of fixing it at the time, Richard Nixon took the crap sandwich that Johnson handed him and he made it worse by taking us off the gold standard. They're all responsible for this. The political class is responsible for this, along with, obviously, their boss, the Federal Reserve, owned by the big private banks. But don't forget who else is to blame for this stuff. It's Roger Wicker. It's Thad Cochran. It's Cindy Hyde-Smith. It's Michael Guest. It's Greg Harper. It's Benny Thompson. It's Mitch McConnell. It's Nancy Pelosi. Name a politician, a Congress critter, that has been in Washington, D.C., particularly over the last 14 years, that has not voted against every one of these spending bills, and that is about 98% of them. There are a lone few people, the Thomas Masseys, the Justin Amashes. Now, we don't like to talk about Justin Amash because he made some pretty stupid moves, I thought, when it came to Donald Trump, but he at least was against all of this spending, and Republicans turned on him because he didn't like Donald Trump. There have been a few of them that have voted against these spending bills. The great Ron Paul was actually nicknamed Dr. No in Congress because he voted no on all of these spending, on all taxation issues. He voted no, but they were very lonely. All of these Congress critters that you are slapping backs with at the Rotary Club, that you are just tickled pink, that you got to take a selfie with. I see these pictures all the time. It makes my stomach hurt. Everybody lines up to take a picture with some politician. You think you're in on the game? Well, I'm going to explain to you as we go through the show today, the doom loop. The next 30 minutes, I'm going to explain to you the doom loop we're in now. And it's created by these people that you're patting backs with. You think you're in the club. You're about to find out you ain't in that club. You are pandered to. You're allowed to take a picture with one of these princes or princesses as they come through town and glad hand for your vote. You're allowed to get within some proximity of them, but you ain't in their club. They're not going to suffer what you're about to go through. I'll explain the doom loop when I come back. Stick around. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. We're about to talk about the doom loop. You know, it's really sad to me is that some of the biggest nation-changing things have been happening over the past, since the great financial crisis. Really, it was in the new millennium that people don't pay any attention to and don't understand. I would imagine if I went out on the streets, and I think about this a lot, I really should probably do it. I should go downtown or go to supermarkets with a microphone and just start asking questions. I would say 98% of people cannot explain what QE is. Do you know what QE is? Quantitative easing. See, they purposefully gave it this kind of obtuse name, quantitative easing. QE1, QE2, QE3, QE4. Nobody knows what that is. But it was a radical departure for the way the financial system works in this country. It's what banana republics do. And 98% of people have no idea what it is. And do I explain that now, or maybe I'll do that later? Because I want to explain this doom loop, and I'm looking at the clock and realizing, because I saw a couple of headlines, I'm going to try to explain it. Here's a headline here. This is new, a new headline. I'm not reading anything from 2007. This is brand new. More subprime borrowers are missing loan payments. Borrowers with limited or troubled credit histories are defaulting on credit cards, car loans, and personal loans. Delinquencies on subprime car loans and leases hit a record in February based on Equifax tracking that goes back to, anyone, 2007. It's a record now. So we now are starting to see subprime borrowers default. Does that remind anybody of anything? Gee, I wonder why the lenders in Wall Street made all of these risky loans again. It did not work out well for them back in 2007, 2008. Could it be that the war criminal that I played earlier, George W. Bush, followed on by Barack Obama, bailed them out? So they make all this money collecting these high interest loans to subprime borrowers. And then when the bottom falls out and inflation hits, and now subprime borrowers are spending all their money on food and energy, they can't afford their car and house and credit card payments anymore, the federal government comes in and bails them out. If they hadn't been bailed out by the war criminal George W. Bush or the war criminal Barack Obama, then those businesses that made the risky loans would have gone out of business, and the other banks might have looked and gone, uh-oh, we better not do that. They all lost their jobs. Big investment houses, big Wall Street banks like Goldman Sachs and Citigroup had to declare bankruptcy because they made all these risky loans. But we didn't make them pay that price. Instead, against the will of about 80% of the American people in polls at the time, the war criminal George Bush and the war criminal Barack Obama both bailed out Wall Street, so they're doing it again. And this is almost funny, because while the partisan whack jobs are out there pointing fingers at each other these days, you're about to get played again. They will be bailed out again. The problem this time is it's not going to work like it did last time. So lenders are probably going to be bailed out with newly printed money. Here's the doom loop portion of this program to explain to you how this works. So there is no money to bail out the banks, to bail out the subprime borrowers that are about to lose cars and homes, and you know, everybody's struggling with inflation. You've got states that are saying they're going to send out, I think California was monkeying around with maybe $450. Gavin Newsom was just going to wave some magic wand and send everybody $450 so they could offset their rapidly rising gasoline prices there. And so what they're going to do in this situation, my prediction, this is the doom loop you're in. See, the problem is that because 98% of the people didn't understand what QE was, they don't understand the money printing, they sure as hell don't understand the Federal Reserve. As a matter of fact, they run away from any conversation about it because it seems so complicated and dry. But this has been going on now for so long, and it just takes a while for it to happen, you know. If you're eating something that's bad for your health, you don't die the next day. And people don't, you know, I do a whole show on this where I'm trying to help you connect. These bad habits you have over the course of years manifest themselves in type 2 diabetes, cancer, constant illnesses, weight gain. It doesn't happen the next day. You don't eat a donut one day and become morbidly obese the next day. It is years and years of bad habits that manifest themselves in life-altering, sometimes life-ending diseases. Well, we've been doing this for quite a period of time. Of course, most of the partisans that listen to conservative talk radio believe this all started on January 20th of 2021 when Joe Biden took office. And this is why we'll never solve these things. So you're about to have a bunch of people default. We will print up money to save both the banks and those who are defaulting, the subprime people, so that they don't lose everything they've got. And this newly printed up money sent to the banks to bail them out, sent to the borrowers to bail them out, will actually create, anyone, more inflation. And so when there's more inflation, more people will default on loans. Because food and energy and clothing and everything will go up. Housing will go up. People will have to turn to more subprime loans to be able to get teaser rates, to be able to buy the homes that are suddenly too expensive. Then they will start defaulting as the inflation starts to rise again. They will start defaulting. The government will do, anyone, they will try to bail everybody out. I would imagine, I am predicting, some level of a government-subsidized mortgage. The government will start printing up money to make good, to help you with a down payment or whatever they can do to try to paper over this systemic problem. They're going to print up more money, which is going to create more inflation. And the more the inflation they create, the higher prices go, the more it hurts people, the more they fall behind, the more it makes the government print more to try to get them to catch up. But just printing up that money to help people catch up or to bail out institutions actually creates more inflation. This is the doom loop. Am I making this clear? When I come back, I'm going to tell you there's a doom loop in housing right now. So I'll tell you how this plays out too. This is the doom loop. Now, the thing that you have to understand is they've been doing this in a very severe way for the last 14 years. And here's the toughie, during the Trump administration. This was all being baked into the cake during the end of the Bush administration, all through the Obama administration, all through the Trump administration. This great economy that you saw during Donald Trump, it was all goosed by all this printed money, by all these low interest rates. It wasn't real. It was an illusion. We've had unicorns and candy canes. A lot of people think that's what the Trump years were. Those years of prosperity, they were fake. They weren't real. They were juiced. They were on steroids. It was a heroin high that you were experiencing, and you're thinking it was this real thing. This has been going on for forever. So we'll talk about housing when we come back, because there's headlines on that too. Be right back.
Afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. And so
all right, next hour we're going to have Stephen Utroska call in, I believe. We're going to talk about the crypto markets. Is that somewhere where you can go hide, where you can take your assets, where you can run to? Is that the stable store of value that is promised by the crypto people? We'll see. Housing. It's not good for housing prices when interest rates rise, but for some reason, I've been talking to builders. I'm fascinated by all kinds of different industries. I ask anybody that's involved with just about anything with work. I ask them about the labor. I ask them about their supply chains. I talked to someone yesterday who used to be employed with dollar stores. I talk to everybody. I'm interested to see what's going on out there. But I've been talking to builders, and they are just like, happy days are here again. I said, are the higher interest rates not bothering you? Nope. Houses are selling in a single day. You know, housing was never really designed to be the ATM that it has become. Housing was about shelter and some level of stability, kind of an ownership stake in the American dream. It became a casino. And we saw that did not work out real well in 2007, 2008, but they will tell you this time is different for some reason. But housing is about to actually see, this story was on Zero Hedge. Is the housing crash starting? I said last week we shared extensive empirical evidence that the U.S. housing market is starting to crack when we quoted regional managers from John Burns Real Estate Consulting. Here's what they had to say. This is in Texas. Dallas builder said interest lists are shrinking or buyers are truly pausing. Houston. This is what a Houston builder said. Many first-time buyers simply no longer qualify with the increase in interest rates and their debt-to-income ratio gets out of whack. In San Antonio, builder said, traffic has been cut in half since the hike in rates. Raleigh, North Carolina, another hot market. Investor activity has slowed dramatically. A Provo, Utah builder said investors are evaluating the investment more critically than in the past. Washington, D.C., traffic half what it was in March, worried about first-time buyers. Many fewer real buyers than number of people collected on interest in the last 6 months. Certainly more attempts from buyers to start negotiating housing prices. See, we've had a period of time where everyone just goes, you better come in with an offer by 6 o'clock tonight, and it better come in over asking. If you have any hope of getting this house, those days are over because interest rates are higher now. Fewer people can afford these homes. And so what is going to happen in the housing market? Housing is obviously a large driver of the economy. A lot of people are involved everywhere from concrete pourers to builders to furniture manufacturers. You got to furnish that new home. Moving companies. A large portion of our economy is based around housing. And that's fine. That can be perfectly normal in an economy with a growing population. You got to build more homes for more people. That's great. But this speculation, this idea that somehow housing has become a part of the great casino, you buy a house, you make 40% a year on the thing. That's just what you do. That's how you get rich. Well, just like the stock market, it's been in a big, fat, ugly bubble. And the cracks are starting to show. So here's where the doom loop comes in. You're going to start having people now, because the housing prices have gotten too high, they're starting to use subprime loans again, teaser rates. They're getting 3% now, where a 30-year maybe at 5.75, or they're getting 3.5%. But in a few years, that resets. We're going to do 2007, 2008 all over again. A bunch of people are going to start losing their homes. The government is going to do what? They're going to try to bail them out. They're going to bail out the banks that have been doing these risky loans again. The problem is that now that the inflation is out here and unleashed on the American people, inflation happened a long time ago. Money printing is the inflation. The definition of inflation is not just rising prices at the grocery store or at the gas pump. It is increasing the money supply. And they have been doing that through every administration, hardcore, in the last 12 years, but basically every administration going back 60 years, 100 years. The government now has this inflation that's in front of us. They're going to start bailing out home buyers. They're going to start bailing out the housing industry because they don't want to see that crack. But that bailout money that is printed up out of nowhere creates, anyone, more inflation. And I don't care who the hell you vote for in the midterms or who you vote for in 2024. This is the doom loop. They're going to tell you they're going to solve your problems, but their answers are always the same. Print more. Buy more time. Give you the facade, the illusion of prosperity in this country, and call it a great economic record. It's not going to work anymore. You're about to find that out. Be right back.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. So I'm explaining the doom loop that we are in. The change, the only thing that is different about right now than really during the Trump administration, the Obama administration, the Bush administration, is, you know, the money printing has been going on. Now, it was huge during COVID in particular. During Trump's final year and Biden's first year, because they're two wings of the same bird, you understand, they did just huge money printing to address the problems that they caused with their reaction to COVID. But this money printing has been going on for a long time, but it takes a while for this newly created money to find its way into consumer prices. Now they found their way into consumer prices. Now we're whining, and so it becomes a political issue. For so long, they've been able to print the money, and we just didn't pay attention, right? We didn't care. Now, particularly libertarians or Austrian economics people, we're warning about this. We're telling you. This money printing is going to lead to inflation. As I said, I've been talking about it for 5 years on this air. Nobody was interested because it wasn't happening. Because it doesn't happen the next day. But now it's happening. And so this has changed everything. Now there's political pressure because people are getting hurt. And the government has no tools to address it now. They were able to fill in all of these huge gaping holes in the economy with money printing because nobody really cared. Nobody really noticed. The elites benefited from it. Their wealth has just skyrocketed. And the little people were able to just ignore it until now. And that's the game changer. So I'm talking about the doom loop here. There is this alternative financial system that is out there that is functioning to some degree. And I'll just admit to you, I don't completely understand it. And there are very smart people that say this is a great thing in the future when we're talking about the crypto space. And there are very smart people who say it's basically a Ponzi scheme. It's going to zero. It's not going to work in its current form. So I don't know where the truth lies in there. It's very, very rare I find myself in or watching anything where I think that people on either side of the issue are equally smart. That's usually pretty rare. It's pretty easy to see where the idiots or the, you know, if the government's on one side of things, you pretty much know the opposite is true. With crypto, I'm a little lost. So I have my crypto consigliere in Stephen Utroska, who is a crypto bull and a crypto participant. And so we've got him on air with us today to try to help figure out exactly what's going on with crypto right now. It's been a bumpy ride for them, so I want to figure out why. And if it is still the future and what people should be looking to. Stephen, you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. So, you know, I'll admit, I've got a basic understanding of cryptocurrencies, of blockchain and the decentralized ledger of transactions. It's really enough to make me dangerous. But crypto has been having a very bad run. And I would have thought at a time where we're seeing economic trouble that people would be withdrawing assets from a dying stock market and moving them into crypto. when the dollar, now the dollar's been strong, but when economic trouble happens, you would think people might be flowing into this, but Bitcoin's been melting down along with the tech stocks. So what's the story? What's going on with cryptocurrencies right now?
Yeah, so I mean, you actually see that with a lot of other commodities too. So gold, you know, in a very bad, you know, when we have a bad economy, you would think that gold would skyrocket too, because everybody's taking their money out of, you know, either cash or out of stocks and putting it in gold. But historically, you've also seen gold will take a tumble too with it. And so, I mean, I think the same things with crypto right now, that it's playing just like stock. So when people, you know, when people get scared of their dollar, of what's happening to it, they pull out of any investments. And they try to, you know, hold on to it in a, you know, in some kind of commodity that they can hold on to. And so I think you're seeing the same thing there. And cryptos have, you know, there's some cryptos that are more stable than others. Certainly Bitcoin is the biggest. And so it has, over the last couple of months, has, you know, crashed down, I guess. But, it, you know, it's lost probably 50% from its all-time high.
Right.
But when you're looking at some of the alternative coins, some of the lesser-known coins, there's some of those that have gone to zero, and there's some of those that have lost 70, 80, you know, 90, 100% of their all-time high prices. So Bitcoin is certainly the leader in cryptocurrency. I don't know that it's the best technology, but it's the most widely accepted as being something that you can put your money into. And I wouldn't say that it's a Ponzi scheme. I think there's very good technology behind it to use as a, you know, digital currency that's non-central or that's uncentralized, decentralized, so no government has control over it. You know, I've gotten into lots of conversations with people about the difference between a digital dollar and cryptocurrency. You know, not all cryptocurrencies are decentralized, but the ones that are decentralized are non-controlled by government. Now, if the government's crashing your economy and people are pulling out of any kind of investment, then certainly they can affect it, just like, you know, they can any other commodity.
Right. So just tell us this. So as somebody just walks up to you and says, okay, I know you're into cryptocurrencies. Why should I put any of my money into cryptocurrencies? What is the selling proposition? What is the narrative that says that cryptocurrencies are the future and it's where you need to be and it's where you need to be now, particularly in the face of this wipeout of half the value over the last year?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same thing with stocks. You know, why would you put any money in stock? Why wouldn't you just keep all your cash in, you know, in your mattress and keep it there and save up your whole life and keep it in cash? It's the same thing. If you do that, there's people who have done that. You know, keep cash, never put any money in any kind of investments. And, you know, if you look at the value of the almighty U.S. dollar over the last, you know, 50 years, then you would, you know, have, you know, 1% of what you did 50 years ago,
yeah,
the purchasing power of it. So, I mean, you can either put money into investments and try to grow that, or you can, you know, hold on to the cash and watch it, you know, flow away. So, I mean, I think that just like stocks, crypto, you know, can increase in value, whereas the dollar has continually decreased in value. So that's my point of getting into it. But I also think because it's decentralized, it's not like a stock where it's completely controlled by the SEC. They know exactly what you're trading, how much you're trading, and they will tax you on it. With a decentralized crypto, you know, the government wants to know how much you have, and they want you to tell them how much you're trading or selling or buying or using it to trade with or to barter with. But there's no way for them to track that with the blockchain.
But and our government currently is demanding that, right? I mean, anybody who's filing taxes right now has to declare any buys or sells on their cryptocurrencies,
right?
Don't they?
Yeah. They are asking that you do that.
But there's no way now, they can find that out. If you would just leave that off of your tax return, there is no way that the government
The only way they would know, you know, what you're doing is if they find out what you're, so you know, you hold crypto into a wallet. It's what they call it. It's a digital wallet. There's a specific, you know, line of code. code that you have that designates your wallet, but your name is not associated with that. There's no ledger anywhere where you've put your name in that wallet. As long as you're using a non-custodial wallet, which means no one's controlling that for you. So a custodial wallet is kind of like Coinbase is one where they actually hold your wallet for you. They control it. They have all your information over that. But if you're using a decentralized non-custodial wallet, all it is numbers on the blockchain.
So that would be similar to a custodial wallet would be similar to having a brokerage account for your stocks.
Right,
so someone's holding all those things for you, and you're just getting a record of what's there. But the wallet is almost like you've got Bitcoin or whatever cryptocurrencies, and it's just sitting in your pocket. Nobody else
That's
is
right.
monitoring it.
Yep.
Okay. What is the, so what's the benefit? So is crypto an investment or is it a currency?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, just like if you bought, if you invested in silver coins, 50 years ago, those silver coins, you can still use that as a currency, but it's also, there's value behind it outside of just what the currency value is. And so I think that's what crypto will be. Crypto will be something that, eventually people will accept it. And there already are people, businesses, countries that are accepting, specifically Bitcoin, but other cryptocurrencies, they'll accept that as a form of payment. So, just like you use Venmo or PayPal or anything else, you just, send it over to them and they accept that as a currency. And so whether you want to call it a, currency or a something that you're bartering with, it's all the same. You can use that to purchase, some hard commodity that somebody has to sell. So if you want to buy a car, you go send them some Bitcoin.
It makes very good sense to me as a payment technology, almost similar to a PayPal in that, you actually don't have fees. You can transfer money instantaneously, where sometimes even going bank to bank may take 2 or 3 days to settle. So there's all kinds of advantages to that. But, I look at what happens to crypto on a daily basis, where it can be, I get Coinbase emails ever since you hooked me up with Coinbase. I got to tell you, I think my $10 worth of Bitcoin that I got when I signed up for my account on your recommendation is only worth like $4 now. So you've already cost me $6, but I guess it was free money anyway. But, if you've got, why would somebody take we know that the value of a dollar is 8% less in terms of purchasing power. It's 8.5% according to government statistics. You and I would probably argue 15 to 20% less. But, the U.S. dollar is worth 8.5% less today than it was a year ago in terms of purchasing power. But, Bitcoin, if a business takes in Bitcoin, that day it could lose 10% of its value in purchasing power.
Right. Yeah. So what most companies do if they're actually using it as a cash flow, a lot of what they do, and I know you want to talk about this, is they use stable coins. So as soon as they receive the Bitcoin, they then transfer that over, almost immediately,
right,
to a U.S. dollar stable coin.
Right. So that
still
makes it
decentralized. That's not run by the U.S. government. That is a one-to-one. They've set up algorithms so that it stays with, the current value of the U.S. dollar.
Right. Well, can you hold on for another segment? I need to take a break,
yep.
But I want to talk about that because that's kind of what I've seen as the big news is that. So we have these stable coins that are supposed to operate, in my mind, and again, I know very little about this stuff, almost like a money market. A money market's supposed to be this stable account where they maintain this value. They give you a little bit of interest, but it's just a very good, secure place to put your money. And a stable coin has been kind of like the money market of crypto. Is that a good explanation?
Yep, that's
of
right.
It? But in the past couple of weeks, some of these things appear to have blown up. So I wanted to kind of understand what's going on there, particularly the story around Luna. And I am fully prepared on the other side of this break to have this conversation and walk away from it, still not understanding it, but I want to try. So,
yep.
All right.
Good.
We're talking to Stephen Utroska, my crypto consigliere. We'll be right back to try to figure out exactly what's going on with crypto. And I want to hear what he thinks is the future of cryptocurrencies. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much, and my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open.
All right, we're back. This is Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking to Stephen, Utroska here about cryptocurrencies. And I got to tell you, this is, you know, I don't know this is great radio because I'm confused by what's going on with crypto. It's very hard to explain, particularly in two segments on an over-the-air radio show by phone. What happened? Okay, so they have things called stable coins. We left there that are, we're told, you know, the way it's kind of explained to me that in the crypto markets, it's kind of like a money market account. It's the safe place to put your money where you can protect your downside. Nothing, you're not going to make a ton of money off of it, but it's a place to park your money where you know it'll retain its value. That has not been the case for some of these over the past few weeks in particular. So what's going on there? Is this not a sign of some big trouble ahead?
Yeah, so the one you're talking about specifically is, you know, the Terra stable coin. So as listed as UST was the trading designation for it. And the way it worked was it wasn't backed by fiat currency. So for them to keep a one-to-one with the U.S. dollar, they had this in it, and it's still complicated, you know.
There's an algorithm
of the way this worked, but basically – if there was increased demand on the Terra U.S. dollar, then so that the prices didn't go up because of increased demand, it would create Luna. And so it would create new Luna, and you know, as it created new Luna, the price of Luna would go down, and it would be able to, you know, justify basically reconcile between the two to keep the Terra U.S. dollar a one-to-one to the U.S. dollar.
Right.
To the fiat currency, you know, U.S. dollar.
Kind of like a scale, so, taking adding to one side if it starts to rise to bring it back down
right.
So everything stays level.
So what happened was there was a ton of, you know, really big investors, billion-dollar investors in that had, you know, their money in Terra USD, you know, as a stable coin. Well, they all, you know, all at once pulled out, decided, hey, we're basically going to, you know, sell all this, change it back over to a fiat, you know, U.S. currency, and get out of that so that we're just out of this crypto market right now. So when all of a sudden a ton of people left the Terra USD stable coin, of course, that means that in order for it to retain its value, it had to create a ton of Luna. So all of a sudden, there was about a billion Luna coins out there. And when all these sharks left the Terra dollar, it created, went from a billion Luna to about a trillion Luna. And so, I mean, almost overnight, the price of a Luna coin went from like $66 down to, you know, two thousandths of a penny.
Yeah, I heard there were 20 zeros in front of I talked about it the other day. Somebody had made a $1.6 billion investment in it, and as of the time it was printed, the story 2 days ago, there it was worth $2,397, something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it came crashing down. But, you know, again, like I was saying, you know, the last segment was, this to me is more of like a stock that you can invest in, but it just allows you to easily trade the stocks. You're not having to go through a stock market. You're not having to go through a broker. You don't have to do any of that. You can immediately trade it from one person to the other, but the value goes up and down based on supply and demand, just like a stock would. But also just like a stock, you are investing in either the company that backs this, and not all coins, not all cryptocurrency out there are just for currency purposes. So Bitcoin is generally just for currency. It was created as a alternative currency. But a lot of these cryptocurrencies are more like stocks for tech companies. So there's tech companies who are, you know, doing new innovations. And so to raise money, they're selling coins in their name as a fundraising mechanism instead of going to the stock exchange and creating stocks and doing it that way.
Right. It's actually cheaper for them to do it. It's so expensive to go public
right. That
doing an
exactly.
ICO is much easier.
But just like stocks,
right.
Just like, you know, the Enron scandal and things like that, where all of a sudden tons of people are buying into it, the price is skyrocketing, everybody thinks it's a great investment.
WorldCom.
And then overnight something crashes. You know, and so all of a sudden your stock that was worth $1 million yesterday is now worth pennies. So the same thing can happen, you know, to these cryptocurrencies.
Right.
And I think, you know, long term, when you have crashes like this, just like in the stock market, just like in the dot-com crash, you know, after the bubble, you know, you'll have, you know, thousands of cryptocurrencies that will just die. You know, they'll go down to worth nothing. Nobody wants to invest in them anymore. And so they'll just, you know, lose their value. And so out of that comes a handful of very stable cryptocurrencies that people will want to invest in. And so Luna actually bought, I bought $200 worth of Luna the other day because they say they're going to try to in some way correct that. And if it does, you know, then my $200 may go up to, you know, $1 million. But I have very little hope that that will happen. And I think that nobody has any, you know, they don't trust Luna anymore. So no one wants to really invest any money in that. So the value, I'll probably lose my $200, you know, yeah. It'll probably go down to, you know, being worthless too, but it's all speculative.
That was a lottery ticket.
Yeah. If you go into crypto thinking that it's anything other than being speculative, that you could lose your money, especially if you're putting money into some of these alternative coins, some of these, you know, if you've never heard of it, then it's probably speculative.
Yeah.
Bitcoin, right. You know, Bitcoin's a well-known, well-recognized cryptocurrency. It's generally more stable. You know, as a percentage, it has lost less of its value in this downturn than most other coins have.
All right. Well, let me just ask you this, and we'll wrap it up. But have you been surprised, and are you at all concerned? Have you lost any faith, or are you casting a little bit of a side eye at this, just going, huh, maybe this isn't quite going to perform the way I thought it was, or is this just what you think is acceptable ups and downs of a little bit of a Wild West establishing market?
Yeah, no, that's exactly how. So, I mean, if you look, you know, we only have about 10 years worth of, you know, hindsight to look at crypto. But the hindsight in the last 10 years show that it has, you know, played very well to about what the stock market does. There's ups and downs, there's roller coasters, but the line is trending up for value in cryptocurrency. More people are investing it, more people are accepting it, more people want to get involved because they see the benefits of it. And so I think this is just another downturn of the market, just like you see in, you know, in the stock or stock market, that it will eventually pull itself back up and the line will continue to trend forward. We'll lose a bunch of cryptos. A lot of them will go out of business. A lot of them will lose their value and they won't, you know, they won't be worth anything, but there's a handful of them that will come out very well off and they'll set themselves up, you know, as the standards.
So you
so I think
you
the
are
outlook is good. I'm not selling out. I'm not getting out. If you have money in it right now and you're thinking about selling out, you're only going to lose money now because you've already lost in a downturn. But if you look at the and I'm not a financial planner and I'm not giving anybody financial advice. You have to play it. It's all speculative. But me personally, I will keep my money in crypto and hope that it continues to trend upward how it has for the last 10 years.
And so you are a hodler? Is that the term?
Yeah.
And what does that come from? What is the origin?
Hold on for dear life.
Okay.
H-O-D-L. So yeah. Instead of just saying hold, you know, they say hodl. Hold on for dear life. You just got to hold on to it. It's going to go back up. Just got to hold on.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. I my concern is that maybe with the performance of it right now, the government's just like, well, you know, this is going to scare a lot of people away. It's volatile. It hadn't really established itself. But if it ever became a real threat, if I saw, you know, people leaving banks, if we have a dollar crisis and people are pulling money out of banks and putting them into crypto, or if crypto is attracting money away from large institutions that have, you know, really kind of controlled the scene, that governments will move in to ban it. And while I understand it is out of the reach of, you know, authorities, because it's just out there. You've got your wallet. Nobody really can get into it. I understand all of those types of things. But I think they were just scare so many people out of it. So few people. I'd love to see it be a black market thing.
I'm in favor of black markets that avoid the government across the board. You know, I don't think that's a bad thing. But if it goes that way, then it becomes really another beast, almost something that the vast majority, 95-98% of people wouldn't be involved in. And I don't know how it can hold its value there. So my big fear with it is government regulations, government competition with a central bank digital dollar. If they come out with that, how would you ever, if they don't let you, how would you take your central bank digital dollar and transfer it into a cryptocurrency?
Yep. Yeah. I'm with you. I understand those concerns. I don't have those concerns. I think that get into it before they create the digital dollar and, you know, make you convert all your cash over to it. I think we'll continue to see a rise in crypto.
Yeah, we'll see it. All right, so mark it down there, people. We'll make sure we'll have this conversation every 6 months. We'll just see which way it's going.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Stephen. I appreciate it. All right,
see ya.
Talk to you later. That's incredibly complicated stuff to me. It really, I mean, it's something new. As a libertarian, I just absolutely love the idea. I'm a little mystified, and they do say, you know, don't invest in something that you don't fully understand. This does not stop the vast majority of people from investing in a whole lot of things they don't understand. People are buying houses right now thinking housing can never go down again. You know, I mean, what do people truly understand? Most people really don't understand the stock or bond market, to be honest with you. But when it comes to crypto, it's a complicated beast, and it's been taking a prison pounding. So this is either a growing pain or a sign of danger ahead. We're going to find out. I don't know which way it's going to cut, but we will see soon. Anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Look, I don't know where crypto goes. I don't know for sure where the market goes. You know, there's a case to be made. I listen to a lot of stuff, and I listen to smart people that have been right before. And what's interesting is there are people who have been very right before. There are some people that were calling the housing crisis back in 2005, 2006. Hell, 2004, they could see this trend of trying to get interest rates artificially low to rebuild the economy from the dot-com crash. See, the government is always trying to mask their huge monumental mistake. Instead of just admitting a mistake, letting the consequences play out, and then not making that mistake again, what the government does is they take a mistake, they refuse to acknowledge it. This is the federal government, the Federal Reserve, Wall Street, it doesn't matter who it is. Instead of acknowledging a problem, they find a way to paper over it, to hide it, to say, well, we never could have seen that coming, but now we're going to do this thing, and it's going to fix all of that. But the thing that they try to fix the first thing has its own whole host of consequences. And so we never see the wipeout of this. So people who were right in 2007, I tend to listen to. They saw something. They understood the economy. But two people who were right in 2007 may totally disagree about what's going to happen in 2022. That makes it very difficult for me to understand. You know, what do you go with? I go just with what I feel is logic. And the problem with logic and what I think is some sound understanding of economics is it takes a while to play out. It's not very investable, I'll tell you that right now. Because I would not have put a nickel in the stock market for probably the last 6 or 7 years. And the stock market's done very well over the past 6 or 7 years. So it's not an investment strategy to try to deal in reality or what you think is sanity. But what I do know is that as interest rates go up, housing prices can't keep going up. The only way they can force that to happen is to print up more money. And if they print up more money, they create more inflation. So there's no good end to this. They're in a box. I think they're just about out of tools. I'm always ready to hear this thing, though, that the government or the Fed comes out, some new program that I haven't even dreamed that they could do. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to explain QE to you. I don't know if people are interested in this stuff or not, but you should be. You really, really should be to understand what is happening now. I know you just want to blame it on the Democrats and Joe Biden. So I don't know if covering this is of any value whatsoever. Because people really just want to live in the narrative. Doesn't matter if you're on the left or the right. People just want to live in that narrative. It's comfortable. It's warm. It's cozy. Here's what QE has been, and QE stands for quantitative easing, and it started happening in response to the economic crisis. Let's just, QE is the Federal Reserve printing up money and buying bonds. So let me see if I can explain this easily. Imagine you're a pretty successful guy, and you need to raise some money for stuff, and you go out to your friends, and in this case, the successful guy is the United States, and the friends are, say, other countries. And you go, you see, you're a pretty successful guy and you need to raise some money to, you know, make investments or do whatever. And a lot of your friends are like, hey, you know, Mike's he's done well for himself. Look, he looks like he's doing really well. I'll loan him a little bit of money. And so they loan you a little bit of money. And because they think you're a good credit risk, they say, well, you know, I'll loan you money. I know you're good for it. So I'll just charge you, let's just say 5% a year. So everything's humming along. But, you know, I need more money. I need to get more money than I thought I was going to need, so I need to go back out. Well, the next time I go back out and ask for money, people are like, well, you know, you already borrowed a bunch of money, and you seem to constantly need more money. You seem a little riskier than I thought you were, so we're going to need to get 10% on our money now. We're going to loan you money at a 10% interest rate, not the 5% we did the first time, because you're looking a little bit shakier. I mean, I still believe in you. You're still doing well. This is, you know, in this example, this successful guy is the United States. But the friends say, you know, I'm going to need to get 10%. I feel a little bit riskier than I thought. Now, in the case of the United States, in this scenario, we can't afford to pay that higher interest rate. So what the Federal Reserve does is it comes in with something like quantitative easing, and they say, we'll just print up money and buy these things at low interest rates. We'll keep interest rates low. I feel myself not explaining this well. When other countries started looking at us and saying, you're borrowing a bunch of money, you're going to have to pay us a higher rate of interest, our federal government says, you know, we can't afford to pay you that high interest. So the Federal Reserve just prints up money and buys the bonds. And since the Federal Reserve doesn't ever earn anything they've got, they just print it out of thin air. They don't really care about the return. You know, if you can loan somebody $1 trillion at 2% interest that you never even had to earn, what do you care? It's just a free 2% on $1 trillion. So the Federal Reserve has been buying our bonds. It is very similar to you borrowing money from your wife. You know, nobody else will loan you money, so your wife will loan you money. Well, the family, you know, your family is not doing well because your wife may be giving you this money, but your wife lost that money. You're not doing any better. Your wife is putting she's loaning you money off of her credit cards. And so quantitative easing is this, it's called monetizing the debt, which means you just print up money and loan it into existence to the federal government. This is a terrible idea and something that the United States had never done. And so in response to the 2007-2008 crisis, I knew that that was going to be a big problem. And then they came out with this QE, and I thought, wow, I didn't think they would do that. That seems like third world nation stuff. Not only do they do it, here's what the Federal Reserve said. They said, we're going to do this program we've never done before, which is just print up money and loan it to the federal government to help them keep their interest rates low. Because no country will loan, well, not no, but not enough countries in the world want to line up to loan the U.S. money. So we've got to step in to accommodate all this huge spending Washington, D.C. is going to do it. So we're just going to print up money and loan it to them. This had never been done before. And so what they said is, well, this is just an emergency measure. We just had this big financial crisis in 2007, 2008. We're in some big trouble. We're just going to do a little bit of this. And then we're going to stop doing it. And then we're going to take the bonds that we bought, you know, from the U.S. government. We're going to sell them and everything will go right back to normal. This is what they told you. It was called QE1. Well, at the time, it was just called QE. There wasn't a number to it because they told you it was just a temporary emergency operation. But when that didn't work and it didn't fix the problem, they launched not only the first QE, then they went, well, we're going to do it one more time. Just one more time. We pinky swear this is the only time we're going to do this kind of third world financial maneuver. We're going to roll out QE2. But as soon as we get done with this QE2, we're going to fix the problem and then we'll undo what we've done and we'll be right back to being a very sound economy. That didn't work either. So they said, well, you know what? We're just one more time. We swear, really swear this time, just one more time, we're going to do QE3.
And I'm listening to economists who've got their heads screwed on straight going, they're never going to be able to stop doing this. And this is what happens to third world countries, to Weimar Germany, to places that just print themselves until their dollar becomes worthless. Now, it's a little different with us because we've got the dollar reserve currency. I don't have time to get into all this. And I can feel that this may be boring, but it's so important. I'm trying to figure out how to explain it and be entertaining. I need to come up with some QE jokes, I guess, to interject in here. The bottom line is what Peter Schiff called these QEs was the monetary roach motel. You can go in, but you can never leave. The Fed told you they could just do it real quick, get in, get out, save the economy. There was Time magazines that said Ben Bernanke saves the world or something ridiculous like that. But he didn't. He just kicked the can. And then they kicked the can again. And so now what they are doing is they're telling you, because of inflation, all these QEs created this inflation. QEs under Barack Obama, QEs under Donald Trump. And now they are saying, well, we're going to undo that. We're going to go in the opposite direction, quantitative tightening. It means all that money that they floated into the economy, they're going to start pulling it out of the economy. But they're doing that into the face of a recession. They have to do it to fight inflation, but they're going to cause a monster recession slash depression, a huge crash in all kinds of asset classes if they do this. And I think they'll chicken out and start QE5, QE6, whatever number the next one is. Because they can't stop it. It's like a heroin addiction. We're going to give you one more shot. I'm just going to do drugs today. I just don't feel good today. I've got a meeting. I got to keep my head, you know, kind of screwed on straight. I can't do it. But tomorrow I definitely kick the heroin habit, I promise. And then the next morning they wake up and they start feeling a little sick and they go, well, not today either. How about the weekend? I'm going to kick heroin this weekend. And then the weekend comes, and of course something comes up, and they start to get the meat sweat, the detox sweats, and they say, well, we just can't do this. I mean, this is the weekend. I got a birthday party. There's always a new reason why the heroin addict doesn't quit that day. I promise you, July 1st, I'm gonna cut cold turkey. I'm going to rehab. There's always a reason why they don't. That's exactly what's happening right now. They just can't kick this habit. But you know what happens to that heroin user? Eventually, they overdose. They die. At the very least, they are in a very, very bad state of affairs with their health for a prolonged period of time as they destroy their organs or whatever long-term heroin abuse does. It takes a long time to bounce back from that, and that's what we're entering right now. They're telling you with quantitative tightening, we're going to start taking on the withdrawals now. It's going to be a little painful. You've heard the Federal Reserve Chairman say there's going to be some bumps. There's going to be a little bit of pain. So they're telling you we're going to start taking on this withdrawal. But I really believe that when the withdrawal gets bad, they're going to inject some more heroin because the people aren't prepared for the withdrawals. The politicians certainly aren't prepared for the withdrawal symptoms that are coming ahead. That's the way this thing looks to me. And when they inject you with that heroin, if you know anything about heroin addiction, what happens to a lot of people who try to kick heroin addiction is they do have, for a period of time, they're able to give up heroin. And their tolerance for the heroin goes down. When they go back to heroin, they inject the same amount that they used to when their tolerance for it was high, and they overdose and die. It's that relapse that kills them because they just can't handle that dose anymore. That's what this feels like. We are trying. They're telling us they're going to let us go through the withdrawals, but there's just no painless way to let this happen. I got to take a break. I'll be right back. I'm thinking out loud. I know this is complicated stuff, but it is so important. I'll be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, only last few minutes here left in the show. Here's the thing, what I think is important to understand. Every one of these rounds of money printing, QE1, QE2, QE3, just all of the debt, all of the overspending, every round of this, think about it as like a foot of water. And what has happened over decades here in the United States is that, you know, the people lowest to the ground, the poor, then the working poor,
and the working class, you understand, like each level is a little bit higher. Well, this inflation, even at, you know, they tell you it's 2%. We know inflation is probably running 5 to 6% most years. That really hurts the people closest to the ground, right? To the lower income levels. That's a foot of water. They've been suffering under this for a while. We love to judge people and tell them just go out and get a job and, you know, do all this other stuff. But the poor people, they've been getting crushed by even minimal rates of inflation. It affects the poorest the most. So with each subsequent round of this money printing, each QE program that they do, each massive spending bill they do, they're adding water. Well, the problem that I see right now is that it's been swamping the lower classes for a while now. But now they're adding other, they've added so many feet of water with each one of these things, each program, another foot of water. It's at the middle class now. It is now lapping up against the upper middle class people. When we see what looks very possibly to be another stock market crash, possibly a housing crash and a bond market crash, we've got the mother of all bubbles, then a lot of those people in the upper middle class that have got those assets may find themselves more middle class, maybe lower middle class, particularly when it comes to quality of life. Every one of these things, these QEs that 98% of people don't understand, they don't understand government spending creates this inflation. Hell, the politicians just lie straight to your face and say, oh, it has nothing to do with it. But they've added another foot of water, another foot of water, another foot of water. And it has taken more and more Americans and put them underwater financially in this country. And I'm telling you, they've done it so many times. This is a high water level. The only people rising above this right now are about that top 0.1%. We're going to see, you know, if you've ever done life-saving stuff, a drowning victim will grab for anything for safety. And this could be a very dangerous time in our country. Maybe we should try to cling on to those elites, at least drag them down with us. On that note, got to go. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.